Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly call. Today is Monday, April 20th, 2026. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're listening in on Rumble or YouTube and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anybody would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right side of a website of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right side of a website. Okay, we're going to pick up with our scripture reading where we left off last week. We were in, let's see if I can find that, okay. Yeah, we were in the Gospel of Matthew, Sermon on the Mount, chapter 7. The Sermon on the Mount is chapter 5, 6, and 7. So this is the last chapter for the Sermon on the Mount, read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 7. Judge not that ye be not judged. For with what judgment ye judge, ye shall be judged, and with what measure ye meet, it shall be measured to you again. And why beholdest thou the mote that is in thy brother's eye, but considerest not the beam that is in thine own eye? Or how wilt thou say to thy brother, Let me pull out the mote out of thine eye? And behold, a beam is in thine own eye. Thou hypocrite, first cast out the beam out of thine own eye, and then shalt thou see clearly to cast out the mote out of thy brother's eye. Give not that which is holy unto the dogs, neither cast ye your pearls before swine, lest they trample them under their feet, and turn again and rend you. Ask, and it shall be given you. Seek, and ye shall find. Knock, and it shall be opened unto you. For every one that asketh receiveth, and he that seeketh findeth, and to him that knocketh it shall be opened. Or what man is there of you, whom if his son ask bread, will he give him a stone? Or if he ask a fish, will he give him a serpent? If ye then, being evil, know how to give good things unto your children, how much more shall your Father which is in heaven give good things to them that ask him? Therefore, all things whatsoever ye would that men should do to you, do ye even so to them. For this is the law and the prophets. Enter ye in at the strait gate, for wide is the gate, and broad is the way that leadeth to destruction, and many there be which go in thereat. Because strait is the gate, and narrow is the way which leadeth unto life, and few there be that find it. Beware of false prophets which come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravening wolves. Ye shall know them by their fruits. Do men gather grapes of thorns, or figs of thistles? Even so, every good tree bringeth forth good fruit, but a corrupt tree bringeth forth evil fruit. A good tree cannot bring forth evil fruit, neither can a corrupt tree bring forth good fruit. Every tree that bringeth not forth good fruit is hewn down and cast into the fire. Wherefore, by their fruits ye shall know them. Not every one that saith unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into the kingdom of heaven, but he that doeth the will of my Father which is in heaven. Many will say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in thy name, and in thy name have cast out devils, and in thy name done many wonderful works? And then will I profess unto them, I never knew you. Depart from me, ye that work iniquity. Therefore, whosoever heareth these sayings of mine and doeth them, I will liken him unto a wise man which built his house upon a rock. And the rain descended, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat upon that house, and it fell not, for it was founded upon a rock. And everyone that heareth these sayings of mine and doeth them not shall be likened unto a foolish man which built his house upon the sand. And the rain descended, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat upon that house, and it fell. And great was the fall of it. And it came to pass, when Jesus had ended these sayings, the people were astonished at his doctrine. For he taught them as one having authority, and not as the scribes.
Okay, Jen, do we have any questions tonight?
No, I'm sorry, John. We don't have any questions tonight.
And I thought I saw some things coming through. Let me take a quick look. Are you sure you're getting mail from questions?
As far as I know. But since I didn't get any this week, it's hard to say.
Yeah, I'm thinking because I thought I saw something. Let me take a quick look here through my email real quick to see if anything did come through. I can find it over here. Let's see. Yeah, I do have some questions. We're going to have to check your email setup to make sure that you're getting it. Terry, have you been getting them? I think I saw Terry in the room. Is Terry in the room?
Sometimes. I haven't seen any today.
Okay, but you haven't seen any in the last 2 weeks?
No, I don't.
All right, I'll check to see what's going on because there are some questions. Let me see if I can see what's going on real quick. Okay, does garnishing of wages within the state need due process and or a warrant? And also a second part of that question looks like, has anyone ever received Morgan Silver Dollars? It absolutely does require due process. You have to go to court, although the government ignores that. If this is a government, garnishment, for instance, the IRS, or anything from the government, they seem to ignore the law because they pay no heed to the law. To them, it doesn't mean anything. They trample the law. They're not obedient to it. And they're not willing to give anyone due process. For those people who aren't in the courts, that doesn't sound like it rings true, but I can tell you it does. Even in these traffic courts, even the courts that they look like they give you due process, they're not giving you due process. The traffic courts, for instance, and there are other, the whole civil law process is a lax due process, because you're guilty off the bat immediately. And you can't beat the system. So civil law denies due process also anyway. But in any event, the government agencies will come and garnish your paycheck or whatever it is that they're garnishing and not necessarily give you due process. That's one of the things we're trying to repair, of course, and we're going to talk a little bit more about this tonight, and people have questions on it, that'd be good. But what we're doing is trying to get into the Supreme Court and lay it out, make it clear on what exactly that they have done to our law, that they've abrogated the law of the land, that they abrogated the Constitution. We don't have a Constitution anymore in the courtrooms, unless they want to give it to you. They make believe they're going to give it to you anyway. But they just totally ignore it. They live off precedents and also prior court rulings, both of which deny due process, and they will uphold a precedent above the Constitution. They will do that. I mean, it's unbelievable. Oh, it's been like that for a long time, so hey, that's their attitude, But again, this is one of the things we're battling here at National Liberty Alliance going up to the Supreme Court. All right, let's see what else they have. Okay, the silver dollar thing. I've always, what I do, and I suggest people do the same thing, if you're going to go after someone, especially in government, for your denial of due process, I look for restitution by Morgan Silver Dollars. And you have to define that very clearly. You have to be very careful with your language, because if you don't have the proper language, it's irrelevant. Now, I've never collected the Morgan Silver Dollars. I haven't even ever won a case against these people, and I've filed lots of cases, and I've always asked for a jury trial. They never give me a jury trial, and they always cast me out within a couple of meetings, and they just throw you out of the courtroom, because that's just the way it is. And that's why this is so important to win this case. You know, again, we can get back the administration, and hopefully we'll be able to get back both houses in the next election. And, you know, because if we can't get rid of these judges, Congress can, but they seem to refuse to do it. They don't want to do it. I'm sure there's lots of reasons for that. You know, they've got a lot of things going on that they don't want exposed. But nevertheless, these judges should all be impeached, every one of them. We've indicted them. We've indicted every single federal judge in all of the federal districts. What is it, 94 federal, 90, let me think about this. I think it's 94 federal districts, if I recall. But in any event, the Supreme Court papers that we've sent twice was returned twice by the doorkeeper, never got into the before the Supreme Court justice. We are rewriting those papers. I think pretty much a lot of the stuff we have in the ones that we originally filed we're going to use, but I'm going to go through it and we're going to rewrite some of it. And maybe a beginning paper, you know, first couple pages we may rewrite with a different kind of a cover sheet. And we're going to go through, we may have to do this anyway, but we're going to go through, which was going to run quite a bit of money, and we haven't collected enough money to do this yet. But we were going to go to the federal courts on the lower end, the trial court, and then move our way up the system, at least to get our papers to the door of the Supreme Court. But the only thing that's going to make this work is exposure to the people. People seeing these papers, seeing what the charges are, seeing how these courts have been operating and what they are denying us, because people just don't realize it. Unless you have been in their courts, you have no clue on how bad it really is. So anyway, that's what we're trying to fix. Last paper we sent in, they just sent it back and said, no, you got to go down to the federal courts. You can't just come into the Supreme Court. But that's not true. There is a process that you can use to get in before the Supreme Court on a court case, okay, which I think we referred to in a roundabout way. But nevertheless, on certain cases that the lower courts cannot make decisions on. And the lower courts cannot make decisions on anything that we have to say. It has to be go before the Supreme Court. There is an opportunity. I think we're coming in at the right time. And again, we're going to go directly to the Supreme Court. I'm kind of hoping to send this out in about 2 weeks. And we'll see where we go. If it returns back, then we're going to have to go through the process, through the trial courts. It'll probably take about 4 to 6 months to probably get to the door of the United States Supreme Court. I go back to the same thing. Only the people can save the Republic. Only the people can save the Republic. The people have to be conscious of the problem. They have to have a will to desire, you know, the end results of what we're looking for, which is courts of justice. They have to understand that. And we have to get, you know, podcasters talking about it. I do believe the administration is going to support us. I do think that that's going to happen. I'm hearing and seeing different things. There was someone recently, I think it was, let me think who it was. Goodness, I was someone in Trump's administration, they had been using the phrase, Democratic Republic, that's what we are, a Democratic Republic. And that's an oxymoron. It doesn't exist. It can't exist. It's against itself. It's like trying to mix water and oil together. And recently that person, trying to think who it was. Well, if I think about it, I'll let you know. But recently that person came out and mentioned that we were a republic and seemed to have dropped the phrase a democratic republic. Nowhere in our founding papers will you find even the word democrat, democracy. And the word democratic republic doesn't even come into any of their conversations, not within our founding fathers' debates and the Federalist Papers, the Anti-Federalist Papers, not in their letter communications. It just doesn't surface anywhere at all. The word does not even exist amongst our founding fathers. But people use those words. The Constitution is clear. They are to guarantee to us a republican form of government. And that republican form of government is a natural law republican form of government. And they are to protect the blessings of liberty. Right in the Constitution it says so. But and not to debate our unalienable rights, which they do all day long, and the people don't seem to think much about that. That's how bad it is for us that people don't understand. But anyway, people need to support this, need to get the word out, need to get people talking about this, and we're going to talk a little more about that in a few minutes, and then we'll go into the Q&A. But let me see what else, if we have any other questions here. Let's see. Let me just read this out loud. It seems that many Americans have gone through the unlawful administrative courts, which are not judicial, and are literally injuring millions of Americans, and not to mention committing treason. My question is, do you think the judges, the attorneys, the clerks, the police, and those affiliated with the administrative courts schemes are aware of many Americans are awake to this, and we the people are not going to stand for it anymore? The question is, you know, that's the question. Are we the people going to stand for it anymore? That's the question. And I don't know whether the people are going to stand for it anymore. You know, we're not getting really the exposure that we're looking for. That's your job, to get the exposure out there of the work that we're doing here. Because we're not going to get anywhere if we don't have the people behind it. Only the people can save America. So let's go through them one by one. The administrative courts, okay? Also, you know, we can refer to them ultimately as chancery courts, because that's what they are. They're chancery courts. We're supposed to have courts of justice, not courts of chancery. But that's what we have. And when you get an individual up in a courtroom claiming to be a judge and making a decision and sending people to jail and making all kinds of decisions against we the people without the power and the authority of the people, which even with that authority and power, they're not to do anything. They're not to make any summary judgments. They're not to make any decisions on what evidence can enter into the court and what can't. Under common law, any and all evidence you see fit is welcomed in a court of law. If it's that ridiculous, that far off, and whatever the problem might be, it's up to the people to decide that information is irrelevant and doesn't assist that individual. And not up to some judge. But there are people in jail, put in jail by judges, that have not been indicted by a grand jury and have not received a court of justice by a jury of their peers. And when they do get a jury, of their peers, quote-unquote, it's really a stacked jury. And we've talked about that before, and if people are interested a little more, they can ask the question, we'll think a little more about it. Okay, so, do you think the judges and the attorneys and the clerks, let's see, the people, police, attended? Okay, first of all, most judges are as ignorant as the people concerning the law. They truly believe that we are under civil law, that we were founded as the Roman Empire, kind of fashioned among that and operating under civil law. They think that common law is trial court decisions, okay, and they're only self-serving, that's all they are. This is because they are taught this in their bar law schools, and that is treason. Most judges don't even understand this. On a federal level, I think that pretty much all of them understand this. They're far more educated Well, that may not be true either. I mean, the ones that I've come in contact with, they've seemed to have all understood what I was talking about. But, you know, when you listen to, you know, the Senate converse with some of these individuals that are up there to become judges, I mean, they know absolutely nothing. It's really, really a shame and dangerous. Lawyers, they seem to be all lost. I've only met one lawyer, and that is Brent, who wrote the book, The Excellence of the Common Law. It's the only lawyer I ever met that knows what the true law of the land is and knows that civil law is not the law. And any attorney that I've ever spoken to, they think I'm crazy to think what when you explain to them what common law is, and they're in denial, and they think because they have this education that they spent so much money for, they must be right and I must be wrong. But anyway, that's the way it is. Okay, let's see. Also, well, the police have no clue. It seems to me that they try to get people in the police department and with low IQs. I mean, that seems to be what's going on. I saw something on TV today. Michael Francis, I think is his name. He's used to be a mob boss. And he had a discussion with 20 law officers, police officers, federal officers, and so on and so forth. And I could not believe it just you know, with the exception of maybe a couple of people that I heard out of the 20, okay, they have no clue of what the law really is and what it should be. And their mind is so twisted in the way that they think concerning the law, what can be done and what shouldn't be done, it's really frightening. And a lot of that is our fault, because we are as ignorant as they are. And if people want to get their liberty back, if people want to get their courts of justice back, well, you have to understand what's going on. You have to know the Constitution. You have to know their powers and their authorities. And it's a very small book. I mean, look at these little handbooks. I'm sure everybody's aware of these little pocket handbooks for the Constitution. They're very thin. They're very small, sticking in your shirt pocket. That's all you really need to know. That's the law that is required to know. Beyond that, common law is just common sense with an eye on justice. That's what common law is. It doesn't get any more difficult than that. It doesn't deal with statutes. It doesn't deal with any kind of regulations. Okay, it's just common sense, again, with the eye on justice. That's all common law is. And of course, the Constitution, which we the people wrote, which is law, it's statutory law, that we ordained and established for them to be obedient to, that they shred every day. They pay no heed to every day. They have no knowledge of it every day. I've listened to congressmen and even people running for president and listened to them talk, and they have no clue of a lot of these things. And again, you know, if you don't know it, how do you know if they know it or not? How do you know if they're applying the true law? How do you know when they're stepping outside of their authority? I hear them say often, well, we have that right to do this, or I have the right to do that. This is my court. And all these phrases, you know, these words that they speak, we never gave them any rights. We gave them authorities. We didn't give them a right. And then you get these people, they come up before Congress. I haven't seen anybody really focused. Well, I haven't heard this in a while, but I had heard of it quite a bit in the past, where they'll go up to Congress and literally will plead the Fifth. Now, these are people who are appointed individuals or elected individuals being questioned concerning their powers and their authorities, and to bring to the Congress or to the Senate information that they have a duty to bring, a duty to exercise certain authorities, a duty not to step outside of those authorities, and they would plead the Fifth Amendment. But you see, when you have a duty to speak and you don't, That's called fraud. And I don't know why Congress or the Senate lets these people get away with that. Now, I haven't heard that in quite some time, but I remember some years back I've heard on a few occasions where that had come to light in, you know, when before Congress or the Senate. Okay, let's see if we have any other questions. Well, let me just read this and see. Do one have to file a judicial misconduct complaint as to a judge or an attorney and wait for a response before they are sued in their individual personal capacity? No, you don't. I wouldn't even bother with it. I don't bother with it because it's going to be the same thing. They protect themselves. They protect each other. But again, when you sue these people, you know, again, they just throw everything out of the court. They don't care about anything. And if we're not going to be successful in what we're doing here, then we've just lost our courts. It doesn't matter what Trump does and how he fixes all these problems and gives us, America great again. And it's not going to last long if we don't have courts of justice, because that's the key to all things, is that court of justice. Let me see if there's anything here. Something about Facebook. I would like to hear my thoughts on it. I can't get onto Facebook because I don't. You have to be a member of Facebook to get onto Facebook. I've never went to Facebook. I've tried a couple times to read some things that people have sent me, but it requires me to sign in. I refuse to do that. So you'll have to cut and paste that information or give it to me another way to ask a question. What email address should the affidavits? Now, I got a lot of questions on this here. I see a lot of things came through. People still asking questions about affidavits. And here's one. What email address should I send the affidavits to? Which I'm going to go through again tonight. We did do this last week. Some of these emails are older, I see. Maybe people realized last week and they got their questions answered when we went through the filing of an affidavit with us. Let's see what else we have. I don't even know what this is saying, so can't do anything with that. All right. All the others are really on affidavits and filing with us. So I'm going to go through that again. This is extremely important. I do think we have a really good shot of winning this as long as the people start to talk about this and be ready to hear about this and, you know, get it out into the conversations out there. Get it onto podcasters. Send them to the website, particularly to look at the video we put up and talk a little bit about it and maybe give us a call, be interviewed. That'd be good, too. But we got to get the word out there, okay? Otherwise, we're just not going to save our courts because they get away with all these things because no one's looking. They get away with all these things because no one understands. And, so they hide in the darkness. We have to shine light on them. And that's the only way we're going to bring back our courts of law again. And for those people who've never been in the courts, you never know one day. And believe me, you never really know. One day you might find yourself in the courts. And you're going to get railroaded if we don't fix these courts, because that's what happens now. People are getting railroaded. Okay, so I'll lay that aside for now. That's it for whatever questions that I did see up there. Now, real quick, again, I'm going to go through this. And if you're having a real serious problem trying to write an affidavit for this and you don't understand the instructions, then you probably don't understand how the court system works. You don't understand due process and the procedures of the court and how things work. And you can't go into a court and think you're going to win, even if you have a good court. You can't really go into the court and think you're going to win if you don't understand and you're not clear and not able to lay your case out and make your point and your position clear and backed up not only by the facts, but the law. and they'll you know, look at regulations, statutes, codes. They were all written to control the elected individuals, to control the anybody in government. It's written to control people in government agencies, and also, of course, to control certain people in interstate commerce. And we want that. And we've laid that out in Article 1, Section 8, and even into Section 9, there's some information on this. But particular powers are laid out in, I believe, in Section 8, Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution. And there are 18 powers in that particular chapter. And we should know every single one of them. What powers do these people really have? They go far beyond. They seem to have hundreds, maybe even thousands of powers. From my perspective, it seems they make things up on the fly, and it's just unbelievable. You know, they'll use their statutes and different things to you know, rule against you. And then when you bring it up to rule against them, because that's what they were written for, they ignore it and they twist it. I mean, it's really seriously bad, really bad. So anyway, if you want courts of justice and you don't want to get stuck in a situation where you get railroaded and find yourself maybe even jail unlawfully, and you don't mind that, then don't do anything. Just forget about it.
But John, okay.
Yeah.
Don't we have to follow the rate? You know, I watched an old lady that I was helping. And she could barely walk, and she let her German Shepherd out. The German Shepherd was afraid of everything, even a cat. He would run back in. And she'd let it out. Well, somebody stood outside and then videotape or took a recording of it. And then she had to go before the court to answer an ordinance saying that the dog had to be on a leash. To me, they're going to bring us before a court, and I really didn't know what I could do about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What do you say when they're going to, the sheriff is right there or the police department is right there, and I'm supposed to go into the court and say, hey, you don't have anything.
Yeah, well, again, ordinances doesn't apply to the people, although they apply to the people, they write it for the people, because it's all about control. And that's what we have. It's called civil law. That's what we have. Now, you know, I don't think it's wise to walk an animal, you know, a dog or even a well-behaved dog without a leash. I don't think that's wise. I mean, you can find open area where you can let them off the leash and run, only because you never really know. I mean, all of a sudden a dog might see something, react, and next thing you know, the dog gets hit by a car or something. Not so much that the dog, you know, I have a Doberman Pinscher. That's my third one, and you know, they're very protective, and so. But she's never bitten anybody, especially outside. She's very friendly with people. She doesn't like people petting her or anything. But I wouldn't let her off the leash because, you know, she catches her eye on something, and next thing you know, she's heading out for it. You know, so it's hard to control. But you know, it is a problem for someone. I know when I lived on back roads, I used to do exactly that, open my door and let my dog go out, and then she'd come back, and it was years ago. But I don't know what to tell you on that. It is a problem, and I don't know why they didn't.
How about a stop sign? You know, somebody rolls past the stop sign. I mean, it's custom to drive on the right side here in America. It's customary to stop at a stop sign. And they'll give you a ticket for that. And mm-hmm. if you don't show, they'll put out something else. They have you arrested.
Arrested on anything in a traffic, you don't show up, they will have you arrested. That's unbelievable.
Well, how do we defend against that? And, you know, for all of these, even the dog on the leash thing, she was pretty invalid. She could barely get to the door to let the dog out. Mm-hmm. But these are all ordinances that were made by the city council, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's
what everyone is expected to live by in that particular city.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, these are problems. Again, none of these things is really against the law, but they just make it so. Again, I get back to the fact that they don't have the power or the authority to control our behavior whatsoever, unless we really break the real law, the law of the land. You know, you injure another person, you've broken the law. You rob somebody, you've broken the law. You murder somebody. I mean, you know, there's quite a few things, you know, that are wrongdoings. And most wrongdoings doesn't necessarily deserve jail time. As a matter of fact, common law is clear on that. Common law is more about restitution than it is putting someone in jail.
Okay.
So violent, of course, that's problematic. Like I said, I heard these 20 cops talking, okay? And I've talked with many cops. I used to hang out in a cop bar many, many years ago. Not that I knew the law back then, but had conversations and their attitude. Even though they were my friends, they got these crazy attitudes. And they, you know, I call them code enforcement lawyers because that's what they are. That's what they do. That's what they're all about. They're looking for codes. I mean, as soon as they pull you over, if you're driving down the road and they have the opportunity to pull you over, maybe your light's out, maybe you're going a few miles over the speed limit, maybe they think you weaved once or twice and you might be whatever. Yeah, I don't know, whatever reason they use in order to pull you over, and they pull you over, they are examining, looking for all kinds of code violations. Even in their questioning, they're looking to trip you up or for you to say something that leads them to the next step, to the next step. Before you know it, hey, get out of the vehicle. You know, they will do everything even to trick you into searching your car. Do you mind if I look around in your car? No, you can't. What, you got something to hide? I mean, and people get intimidated over something like that. But these people are trained this way. And the lower the IQ of the individual that's pulling you over, you know, the more danger you are in. And unfortunately, that's the problem. I have heard many stories of people that were educated and couldn't become a cop because their IQ was too high. Not that they told them that, but they couldn't get in, and other people did get in. And
can I ask one more question?
Yeah.
Am I consenting to live by a city's ordinances when I buy a house in this particular city?
Absolutely not, because again, you know, to live under some ruling, it has to be a contract, and you know, and that kind of sounds silly a little bit with thinking about this, but nevertheless, that's the idea about it anyway. You know, if you were to move into a place that had that was organized, the homeowners organization set up, and there were certain rules and things that you wanted, that they required you of you, particularly on your house. Your grass had to be cut to a certain height, and this would happen or that would happen if it was this or that. You know, all these different rules that they might, some of them are good, I'm sure, but some of them not so good. But the bottom line is, even with that, even with something like that, in a court of law, it really wouldn't hold up because there's no meeting of the minds. And if you have a situation that's laid out where you don't have the opportunity to debate and discuss and get a contract that really is a meeting of the minds, there is no contract. Now, again, it is kind of problematic because, you know, maybe that's how people want to live underneath. But nevertheless, the law is the law, and that doesn't hold up to you. And it's the same thing with the towns. Just because you buy a house or rent a house and you live in a town, they try to apply these things upon you. But again, they don't have it's not lawful. But they don't even know it's not lawful. Therein is another problem. The people don't even know it's not lawful because they don't understand common law, which is natural law, the laws of nature and of nature's God. Anyway, I don't know what else to tell you on that. So. But
okay,
go ahead.
I was going to say thank you.
Thank you. All right, going back to, you know, this going into the courts, if you don't know how the process works, remember, you know, if we get our courts back, and I do believe we have the opportunity potentially of that happening, but it's going to require people's attention to this. And And you know, they can't survive what we're going to lay out before the court. They can't survive it by ignoring it because it becomes so obvious. But the people have to see it in order for it to be obvious. Again, they operate in the darkness. So if people aren't paying attention, and they know that people aren't paying attention, you know, they're going to do what they want. But anyway, if and when we win and get our courts back, then the court cases that will be resurrected, and there would be anybody who's denied due process, and I guarantee you every single person that gone into the courts and you've lost, you were denied due process because you went into a chancery court, a civil law court. You didn't go into a court under the law of the land, the laws of nature. So, people need to understand that, and they need to know how the court system works, because you got to defend your case. You got to write your papers. You got to defend your case. You got to bring up evidence and lay things out. And it's really not all that difficult. You know, things that are new to you, it's new hat. It looks a little difficult, and it seems overwhelming sometimes. But if you keep with it, all of a sudden it becomes old hat, and you start to realize these things. This is really pretty simple, and the real process, the due process, is pretty logical. Okay, even the due process that's laid out that they should be obeying, okay, that they're not obeying, it's pretty logical. But anyway. Anybody on this is on our front page for those who are coming in on an app or a browser, and they're seeing the desktop. Those people on the phone, you're not seeing the desktop. But if you want to see the desktop information I'm going to talk about quickly, you can go out to YouTube, or you can go out to Rumble on our pages, and you can watch this video, and the one we did last week. You can find that on the right side. Here's our Rumble page channel right there. You can click on that. I think I was supposed to put in, I think YouTube is up here. Anyway, we're at YouTube. It's National Liberty Alliance on YouTube. So if you go to YouTube and just put in National Liberty Alliance, you'll get our page. But it's also the information, particularly on this video, that everyone should watch. It's on our front page. It's only a couple of inches down from the top. And it says, Make America a Natural Law Republic Again. Okay? And again, if you're not familiar with how due process works in the court, and you don't know, and you're looking to say, well, I want to get my affidavit in, even if you don't, you can still go fight it later anyway, and you want to go into the courts to fight your case, you have to know how that works. So you have to take a course somewhere. We do give a course. It's right here. Click here to sign up for a comprehensive 90-hour law course on civil procedure. And, you know, our course is $125. If you go to college to take this course, it's a 5-credit course for civil procedure, because that's what you're really looking to understand is civil procedure, which is due process. So a college course on civil procedure is a 5-credit course, and it's 50 to 60 hours. And college course, about $2,600 per credit. Some are cheaper, I think. Some are more expensive, too. Covering litigation, rules, lawsuits, filing, pleadings, discovery, motions, trials, and appeals. Okay, your heritage is in the law. Your inheritance is liberty. Okay, so our course is 90 hours. It's much more in-depth, and it is focused in particularly on the common law, although we do cover information on statutes and codes and different things, which, again, we teach that all that is written to apply to them. It has nothing to do with you. Okay, right underneath here, the grand jury presentment to the U.S. Supreme Court. Okay, you watch the video. If you click here and watch the video concerning the grand jury's presentment to the Supreme Court, this will give a layout and information on. And we played this, I don't know, 2-3 weeks ago, by the way, on right here at one of our Monday night meetings. But we're not going to do it again, so people can go out, click on this video right here, and see, and you should open up to go right here to, this is up on Rumble, okay, treason, only the people can save the Republic. And this lays out the problems in the Supreme Court, all of the violations, all of the denial of due process, and not just due process, many of your unalienable rights are being assaulted, and you're not getting them. So the other thing here underneath that is the affidavit itself, okay? And I tried to make this as clear and as simple as possible by writing also instructions for that affidavit. So let me just read this. Watch the video concerning a grand jury presentment to the United States Supreme Court, okay? Now, it's not the presentment itself. This is just an introduction to the presentment. The presentment is being worked on right now. Most of it is pretty much written because we've done this already, but we're going to upgrade it, update it, and put a few different new points on it and a new a new cover sheet or cover paper, shall I say. Okay, so we have here, so watch the video concerning the presentment. And like I said, I'm kind of hoping to get this in the next 2 weeks. So anybody who wants to get their affidavit connected to our case here, you need to get it done within the next 2 weeks. Okay, so the example affidavit, click on that to attach to the grand jury U.S. Supreme Court presentment. And then mail it, not email it, mail it. And it's one page. I'm going to go through the instructions very quickly. But mail it with a donation to, and a lot of people were asking where to mail to. And, well, it's right here on the front page, and it's also on the instructions. You mail it to the National Liberty Alliance, so just put NLA. 3979 Albany Post Road, Suite 107, Hyde Park, New York, 12538. Okay, now then you click here for instructions. Let me just click the affidavit real quick. Everything in red is just instructions that you have to put in. It really is pretty simple, though, because remember, we're only looking for people to write their unalienable right violations. So they denied you due process. That's an unalienable right. That's the violation. You don't have to get wordy. You don't have to get into details. You just have to make the point that you had to have a case or had a case. You're being denied your due process, or you have already been denied your due process and you were kicked out. Very simple. This is an affidavit form. You just have to put the case number. Let us know civil or criminal, name of the court, address of the court, date filed, the county of the court, the plaintiffs and the defendants, whichever one you are, and then the case disposition in just a couple of sentences. Then after that, just a sentence or two on each violation against your unalienable rights. Now you could read through this and it'll give you kind of instructions. It's not really that complex. But we did write more instructions, and you can open that up. And you can go through it. And we list out, for instance, a Fourth Amendment violation. We lay that out, what had happened particularly that would cause a Fourth Amendment violation. For instance, let me just put this. You know, here's the amendment itself. The right of the people to be secured in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable search and seizures. It shall not be violated, and no warrant shall issue, but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Okay, these people will come in and they will look for all kinds of stuff. They'll rip your entire house apart, and you know, that's not what the law permits. Okay, they have to know what they're looking for and pretty much where it might be. And so the question is, was there searches and seizures? This is the question to know what you need to write. Was there searches and seizures without a warrant supported by oath or affirmation and a description describing the place to be searched and the person or thing to be seized? Also, I should have added in here, I'm seeing now, is the fact that that there is no sworn oath. Well, I did put that, oath or affirmation. A lot of people, you know, you'll get a warrant maybe, and there may not be a judge's signature on it. There may be a stamp of a judge's signature. It's got to be a wedding signature. The judge has to literally look at this, make the decision, and put his John Hancock on it. He's got to do that. But I'm sure there are a lot of warrants out there that's not happening. Also, There has to be someone's affidavit attached to it. That is extremely rare to see that. But people don't know the law, so we get abused by the law. You know, that's just... and we're going to continue to get abused by the law, their law. Anyway, you go through the Fifth Amendment, same thing. You know, the question is, was there a grand jury indictment if it's criminal? Was there a free and independent trial by jury? Were you put in double jeopardy? Were you deprived of liberty or property without due process of law? That's a Fifth Amendment violation. So, again, it's very simple, and it's only one sentence or two each violation, and because your court case has everything else in it, or should have pretty much anything else. But remember, if you go through this process and you're going to go into the courts to resurrect your case, you have to be able to defend it, and you have to know how due process works. So you need to have this knowledge, or you need to get this knowledge. And again, I get back to the course. You can take our course and get that knowledge. Or you can go somewhere else, go to college and pay $2,600 per credit and get the knowledge there. But of course, they're going to twist things and push on heavily on the civil law, where we do the opposite. You know, we push very heavily on the common law, on the natural law, and what the purpose of the civil law is for has nothing to do with us. We the people that ordained and established the Constitution, that's the law of the land that we apply to them, which lays out the true law of the land, which is natural law. But we wrote the law to control government. That's the Constitution. That was the purpose of the Constitution. And we nowhere in that Constitution nor is it permitted under common law either, nowhere in that Constitution did we give them permission to control our behavior by writing civil law, the law of the city, Babylonian law, in order to control our behavior. So anyway, if you read through this paper here, it should be pretty simple on what you have to do. The question is, and again, you only want to make the points on constitutional violations. The case in itself is totally irrelevant in the federal court. You know, you're looking for them to cease and desist. Why? Because they violated your rights. It doesn't matter what they claim. They're coming. That's all irrelevant. As a matter of fact, if you start discussing the details of the case outside of constitutional violation, the federal court will throw your case out, because they can't hear those cases. They can't hear a traffic case, for instance. There's a lot of things that they cannot hear. Their interest is only, or should only be, in constitutional violations. Okay? So if you read through this, your constitutional violation generally would be Amendment 4, Amendment search and seizures, and how that process is to work, the Fifth Amendment, the Sixth Amendment, the Seventh Amendment, and the Eighth Amendment. Those are the big things. And if you've been violated any of those things as you read through this, you just want to make that point and refer to your denial of your unalienable right of the Sixth Amendment or the Fourth Amendment or the Fifth Amendment or the Eighth Amendment, whatever it is. Okay? But it's pretty much here. I'll make the point one more time. It's a Fourth Amendment violation, Fifth Amendment violation, Sixth Amendment, Seventh Amendment, or an Eighth Amendment violation. And you just put it into your affidavit, which, again, one page. We don't want 2, 3, 4 pages. We don't want people to get wordy. Again, you're not trying the case. You're just making the point, I've been denied my rights. And when you get into court, basically, you know, if they deny it again, you know, you then can file back into the federal court and demand that the court case be shut down, that it is cease and desist. And also, you're going to want to look for damages. You know, again, I always look for $1,000 per violation, although recently I've been talking about dropping it to like $500, because $1,000 is in real money. And then in a footnote, you define that real money as Morgan Silver dollars, okay? And a Morgan Silver dollar right now, I know it was close to 100. I don't know if it went above it. I know it came back down a little bit, but it's going to shoot up a lot further anyway, very soon. But in any event, let's just say if it's $100 a piece, 1,000 times 100 is $100,000. So it's a lot of money, okay, in their debt money system. But You know, that's why I think, you know, we'd probably drop it to 500. Although Cash Patel is suing because of, you know, I forget which news media did this, but they called him a drunk, okay? And he's suing them for $100 million, okay? I know Trump sued for many, many millions of dollars. So, I mean, again, people can do what they want on that. But if you have three or four violations that they violated on you, your unalienable rights, let's say three or four of them, then, you know, each one of those, you can apply $500 in real money. Or $1,000 if that's what you want to do, in real money. So it adds up pretty quick. A lot of money is involved there. Okay, so if you want your day in court, and, you know, this is what we have to do. If you don't think you need your day in court, one day you may come to realize, I do need my day in court, a real court, a court that's going to be just, a court that's going to be decided on by the people, and not some individual who thinks that they own the courtroom, because that's what they do. They think they own it. Okay, let me see if anybody's in the queue at this point. Hang on a minute. Okay, we do have two people in the queue, so if anybody wants to get into the queue, it's a star 6 and 1 if you're on a phone. And if you got an, if you're on an app or browser, should be a button there to enter the queue. So I think that's pretty much it that we have to discuss. And again, if people go back and listen to last week's meeting, you can get more detail on these things that I discussed. And also you can look at the video at any time on laying out the serious problem that we have in the courts and what they're violating and how they're violating, and the list is very, very long. The list of violations, I believe, is even greater than the Declaration of Independence list. They violated so many things. They've just totally shredded our Constitution. Okay, with that, we'll start to take some questions here. First person, again, we only got two people in the queue, so want to get into the queue, now's the time. John, good to see you. You got the mic. Go right ahead. John, you got the mic, Michigan. Thought I heard something for a second. I know last week you tried to get on and you were having problems with your mic. We're not hearing anything at the moment. All right, I'm going to leave your mic open. If you get it going, you can just pipe in and let me, you know, I'll finish with the person I'm talking with and we'll talk with you. And again, there's only two people in the queue, so if anybody wants to get into the queue, now's the time. Okay, it looks like LaRonda. Hang on a minute. I think you're from Arizona, aren't you? No, you're not from Arizona. LaRonda, you got the mic. What state are you from?
Missouri.
Missouri. Okay.
Okay. I was just going to ask, in our affidavit, are we supposed to list a dollar amount?
Oh, no, no, no. You're just making the point that your unalienable rights have been violated. Okay.
Okay.
And basically, it becomes more evidence to the point. I mean, we have hundreds of cases, potentially speaking, I think we could say, that we've been working on over the years that everybody's been violated a lot of, you know, a denial of habeas corpuses, ignoring different things when people's homes were taken without due process, a lot of those. They call them non-judicial foreclosures, and that means that they don't need the courts to do anything. They make it look like it's going to the courts, but it really isn't. At the end of the day, no real signature is put onto it. You know, but anyway, and a few other types of cases we've got to put this. So we've got a lot of evidence, but go ahead.
That was my only question, because I know you was talking about the Morgan dollars, the silver dollars and stuff. So I was like, dang, are we supposed to actually list an amount?
No, that's
that we were seeking.
That's in your case. You know, if you've been violated, if an unalienable right of yours has been violated, you have a right to be restored. And the normal way to restore someone and things like that is money. And so what's your rights worth? Are they worth $10 or $100,000? You know, I mean.
But we don't have to put that in our affidavit.
No, no, no. But you're going to have to deal with that when you. Again, I'm going to say if we win, and I do think we're going to win, I really do. I think the time is here, and I do think the Trump administration is paying attention, and they do understand the problem. And I do think that some of these people are wrestling with words that they've used in the past, like Democratic Republic or things like that. They've all gotten books. We sent every single one of them. It was 40-some-odd people. The book Government by Consent. So they, you know, they should be pretty much educated. That book is just filled with footnotes. You know, this isn't hearsay information. These are facts, and this is our founding fathers. This is past Supreme Court rulings. These are facts that cannot be denied. It's also our founding documents are used. So everything that we claim in that book is backed by, you know, where this information came from, that it's authentic. And your papers, when you write a paper, should have the same thing. It should be, you know, it should have lots of footnotes. Don't leave anything for them to misinterpret to mean anything different. Like if you use the word common law, you want to define, you want to put a footnote on that and define what common law is. You go to Black's Law Dictionary, which you can get a copy. We give a copy in our court course. But there's also a copy of that up on our page. If you go under Education Starts Here, let me see, I'm pretty sure it's underneath Law. And let's see, I think it's under Court Forms. Let me take a quick look. Court Form Process. Pretty sure it is on the website. I think it's on this page. Let's just quickly look down here. Well, you can download, here it is. You got over years law. You can download that dictionary. We have Black's Law Second Edition. I put that up there because it's interesting. It's more, it's harder to cut and paste on that than you can on the fourth. I use the fourth exclusively, but sometimes I'll look into the second edition, and then sometimes I'll look into Bouvier's edition, and, you know, kind of compare them and see once what they might say. Using almost any case, a lot of cases that I've gotten and have put in under footnotes were found in Black's Law, because Black's Law is backed up by past court cases. Almost everything in there is backed up by court cases. And so, you know, you can make the point of what the meaning of a word is, what, for instance, what natural law is or what common law is, and you put a footnote on it. And you explain and you put down the information that proceeds according to the law of the land, according to natural law. And then it'll give a court case that you can refer to, a U.S. Supreme Court case. Sometimes it'll give you other information other than a court case, but to back up the purpose and the meaning of the phrase or the word that you're using for your points to be made, and they're rock solid, you know. If you write memorandums, okay, you want to back everything up, the law of the land. That's what a memorandum is, a memorandum of law. You know, you make a point concerning the conclusion of that law, and then you put into behind it, see memorandum of law on that law that you're talking about, and then you attach that memorandum. And that kind of keeps your papers kind of clean and focused, and for, you know, expounding on the law of the land and making your point to prove what the law of the land is on that particular issue. That's where the memorandum comes into play. And, you know, in our book, we've given, I think, 30 memorandums. You can find all those memorandums also online here.
Okay, thank you.
All righty. John, were you able to get your mic working yet? You're still unmuted. If you get it working, just pipe in. Okay, maybe he's coming in on his phone. Looks like John from Michigan again. Is this the same John?
Yes, yes.
How you doing, John? I'll go get you off on the other one. But go ahead, Ed. You got the mic now.
Oh, thank you. I tried last week and I couldn't get it either.
Yeah, I remember you told me. But go ahead.
Question. We talk about, you know, voting and winning the elections and next election, but it's not who votes, it's who counts the votes. I mean, we've got to get these elections laws straightened out before we can ever win anything. I mean, what, they had 50, 60 million extra votes last time when we had, I mean, it was incredible. I mean, and it's who counts the votes, not who votes. I mean, mm-hmm. they've said that for many years, so, and I'm not sure how to work with that.
That's a quote from communists. I'm trying to think of his name. Let me think. Oh, goodness. It was the USSR, Stalin. I think that was Stalin made them. He might have got it from someone else, too, but that's the key.
Yeah, yeah. In Michigan, where I'm from, Michigan Constitution, Article 1, Section 1, so it starts right out, we the people, are all political power resides in the people, okay? And I'm saying, okay, and if all the political power resides in the people, how much do the legislature have? And they have none. None. I mean, there's nothing there. All those statutes they pass only apply to themselves or the things that they make, which are corporations, and they're treating us like corporations.
Well, absolutely.
And you know, you talk about all the different times you went to court, and I'm just curious, you know, just as for instance, the guaranteeing wages. Do you have any idea when they started guaranteeing wages? What was the first case where they ever started guaranteeing people's wages? Where did that start? I mean, how about marriage licenses? Did Adam and Eve have a marriage license? I don't think so.
Well, garnishing wages. If you go through due process, let's say I sue you and I win in the case in a court of law, and in order for me to collect my money, my only opportunity might be to garnish your wages. Now, there is a maximum amount. I don't know what it is, and it may be different in each state. I just don't know. I mean, you can't take 100% of an individual's income because they have to survive, and they have to be there to pay you next week, too, you know. So it's lawful as long as there is a due process and a warrant in the conclusion of that due process. And
for the government or for individuals?
No, for individuals and another individual.
Okay. Yeah, now, so I'm just saying
for the government, I don't know that the government, look, they sue in the name of the people, and we're not agreeing to a lot of what they're suing in, you know, we the people versus this person or that person or another person, you know, and we don't necessarily agree with that, but that's why if we the people are suing, well, we have to approve of that suit, and we have to be fully informed, a grand jury, because now at this point we're looking at a criminal act, for instance. Okay, so we need to agree and approve that opportunity to go into the court. And then the people have to decide through a trial jury. They get to decide the law. They get to decide facts. They get to decide innocent or guilt. They get to decide what the penalty would be with an eye on restitution. You see, now you can say we the people versus whatever that individual's name is. But they haven't been doing that. One of the biggest scams, okay, is the tax courts. People don't even recognize tax courts. Tax courts are unlawful. Under common law, they've always been unlawful, okay? And, you know, you go into England, I don't know when they stopped, but they had tax. People were thrown into debtor's prison, okay? And here in America, we're never to have anything like that, a debtor's prison. Yet the government has set up a debtor's prison and a special court to deal with that debtor's prison. And that, of course, is the tax courts, the IRS. They'll come out and put you in jail, take everything away from you. And all of that is without due process, okay? It's also unlawful, you know, under common law, under natural law. But again, people are, and I speak to myself first, I'm ignorant or was ignorant. I'm no longer ignorant to these things because I decided I was going to figure these things out and learn what I could. And people need to do that. Otherwise, you remain ignorant and you'll be used and abused an abusive spouse or something. I mean, and you just keep living with it and living with it and living with it. It's time to stop it. We got to make our courts just again.
Well, you know, like a lot of the statutes that say, you know, all persons required or income tax or, you know, all persons are liable for this, that thing. But you look, they have definitions for those things in the statutes. I mean, they all have to have definitions and things. And look at pretty much anything that says person is an artificial person, a corporation, or an individual. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And or bodies politic, that's what they always have another body. And all those things are just that, they're artificial persons. Mm-hmm. You know, they never say, and it's really interesting, because they never say man or woman, okay? Now, if it's in law, if it's not included, it's excluded. So if they don't say man or woman, they say an artificial person, we have to bring that up, that we're not an artificial person, I'm a man or woman. If you pinch it and it hurts, that's a man or woman, okay? If you don't, it's a piece of paper, and that's what they're treating us as, pieces of paper. You know, I'm just curious how many people have brought that up to the judge. You know, I mean, you know, are you, and I've heard this on this thing here before, you know, the all caps name and all those different things. And your all caps name is a corporate name. It's a person. It's not a man or woman.
Absolutely.
You know, so they're dealing with, you know, it's a mistaken identity. You know what, if I said, you're John Durash, if I said, hey, John Smith, you would look at me and you wouldn't reply probably. If they said, you know, so John Durash, if it's all cap names, all capital letters, see, how would you spell that? You know, my birth certificate is capital J, lowercase O-H-N, and whatever, and capital D, you know, lowercase A-A, however you spell your Durash. That's not what they're reading. It sounds like it. It sounds the same, but it's not. That's not what they're reading. They're reading all caps names. So, you got the wrong person here. You got the wrong man here. I'm not there. I'm not. I can't respond to this. I can't plead guilty or not guilty. You're dealing with the wrong entity here. I don't know how many people would think
people,
of that.
People who argue that in court, I the last person I heard that made that argument in court, it's going back a few years ago, they ended up being arrested in the courtroom right there because they refused to acknowledge. And then when they put the judge ordered that person be arrested, then that individual stood up and tried to correct his the point that, you know, and say, yeah, I'm here. But they ignored it at that point. They arrested that person. They put them in jail. The person was elderly. I don't know how old, but, you know, a little up there in age. And he died in prison. But this is what they do. If this is what people want to be done to them and they don't mind this kind of abuse, then don't do anything. But people need to step up and do something. You know, a person is defined in USC 26 as a corporation. You're absolutely right. And I will tell you that when you get into those tax courts, those judges are the most knowledgeable judges concerning the evil that they are doing. They know exactly what they're doing. They know exactly the difference between these courts that are called tax courts. And they have every federal district has a room set aside, and they call it They call it a Article One court. There's no such thing as an Article One court. It doesn't exist anywhere. Okay. What Article One does is it gives power and authority for Congress to create courts underneath the Supreme Court. That's all you'll find in Article One, and they make the claim as if they can create any kind of a court. So they create a tax court. And the tax court is kind of off on its own in the sense that it's separated from the other courts. And these judges are paid from an outside entity to make a ruling in that court. And then they get a bonus if they get a conviction. They'll give you a jury. The jury is stacked. It's a stacked jury. It's always a stacked jury. Very rarely can you ever win in a tax court. And these tax courts, again, they're putting you into a debtor's prison, which is against the law. But they do it, and they'll continue to do it as long as we allow them to do it. So this is the line in the sand. This is what we're trying to stop. This is what we're trying to fix. And if the people don't want to get behind this, then fine. So let me just say this right now. We do need money. If we're going to have to go up through the whole process and go into the trial courts and work our way up, we're going to need more money because we don't have enough. We have enough to start the case. That's about it. But we can. We're going to try first to take it directly to the Supreme Court. We will be, you know, copying the president and his administration. We'll give copies to certain individuals in Congress, with just a couple in Congress and the Senate, a couple individuals we know are friendly to our cause. And we have the new attorney general. What's the name? Do you remember the name of the new attorney general?
I don't off the top of my head. Yeah, some guy. It was Pam Bondi before, but they fired her and replaced him with somebody else. Her with another with a man, I guess. So
yeah.
I'm not sure
we'll
who it is.
We'll get a copy of this, and we'll see once what he has to do. He's part of the administration anyway. So we have been copying Bondi on what we've been doing. So, but we'll see what happens. But again, the thing that's going to make this work the most is the people. But if the people are not concerned, then they're not concerned. But going back to these people here, they know exactly what they're doing in these tax courts. But I'll tell you what, I think any federal judge that I've been before, they know exactly what's going on. They've even corrected me in my, in words that I had used that I didn't pronounce proper, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So they know. They know, and that's kind of signaling me. I know what you're talking about, but you ain't going to get it here. That's their attitude.
Yeah, well, it's treason is what it is. You know, I mean, that's
absolutely, Just think
I've been there and done that. I've been through it all. So, it's terrible. It's disgusting and it's treasonous.
Just think of all the people that have died in prison that never belonged there. All the families that have been destroyed. Income from individuals taking care of a family, that entire family is destroyed. It's just unbelievable what goes on in these courts. Federal courts may be the worst. Well, I think they are the worst in the sense that because they know what's going on. They know the truth. I mean, you got three Supreme Court justices up there that do not deserve being anything, okay? They don't even deserve being an administrative judge. They have brought in outside laws above our Constitution. They've ignored our Constitution. They have defined our Constitution in very odd ways. They think, you know, that they can take our weapons. They think that we don't have the right to speak just anywhere we want and on anything we want. And we talk about political speech particularly. But, you know, when you get back to political power, okay, you're absolutely right. Only the people have political power, but they exercise the politicking, okay, the politics of it. And they get out there and debate things and argue things, trying to change things that they have no power or authority to change. But they do what they want, and the people continue to let them get away with it, mostly because they're ignorant. And when they hear, well, this is the problem, well, it's time to get educated, and they should not remain ignorant at this point if they understand the seriousness of the problems going on in our courts, you know. But they
how much of any of it do you think is the fact that we use that their currency, their paper money or something like that for everything? I mean, is that giving them authority over you?
I'm not sure I understand. You're talking about how much of what they speak that's legit, that they have the power and the authority to discuss?
No. I'm just saying, you know, as far as like the taxes and stuff like that, if you're using the Federal Reserve notes, you know, Federal Reserve notes, maybe they're your property, okay, but that's a debt unit from a foreign corporation. I mean, mm-hmm. If you're using that, are you acknowledging their authority over you?
Well, you know, I remember speaking with an individual who felt that. But you see, the whole thing is fraud. It's built upon fraud and deceit, and therefore it's a crime. So there's nothing else to discuss. You know, the position that this person was making, not that he was happy with it, but he made the position. The position that he was making was that if you're using their money, then you're in their game. Well, how else do you survive when they take everything else away from you? You know, you have no other opportunity to do this or to do that. You have to do this in order to survive. You have to get a bank account so you can cash a check or whatever, you know, from if you're working for somebody. And, you know, these days it's very difficult to even cash, unless you go right to the check, to the bank that the check is being issued from by your employer. But even there, I remember going to a bank. This is going back quite a few years too. Let me think, probably 15 years ago. I went to a bank to get a check cashed that I was given by another contractor, and they wanted my fingerprints. I refused to give them my fingerprints. Can you believe that? They wanted my fingerprint. I said, do you want my DNA also? When's that going to happen? You know?
You put your fingerprints on it, you're probably putting your DNA out too, you know, so.
You're right.
Yeah.
But this is where they're at. Why do we tolerate this? Well, most of it's because we're ignorant. People haven't been injured by this or don't think they've been injured by this. They have no clue on how deep it really goes. But the day will come, though, you will end up, and you may find yourself in court, and then you're going to see and know. So, anyway, it's up to the people to save America, and you could do it in a couple of ways. You know, number one is get the word out. Share the paperwork that we put together, and we're going to be sharing maybe in the next 2 weeks. Share the video. Share the opportunity for people to come in and give their affidavit to attach. And support it. Support the movement by giving us some money. Support NLA generally, giving $5 a month or more. Everybody can afford $5 a month or more. If all of our members gave us $5 a month or more, but just $5 a month, all of our members, we would be able to be professional. We'd be able to cover paychecks every week because we'd have enough money. You know, I get frustrated watching what people give their money to. You know, there's a lot of podcasters out there, and a lot of them are giving some good information, or some of them anyway. And there are a lot of silly things going on out there that people give their money to. Well, this is probably one of the most important things you could do, is to give your cup of coffee and your donut once a month, give that up and give it to us. Give us that $5 or more. And some people can't afford more. We have a few people that give us $100 a month and $50 a month, but most people give under 20, and that's fine. But we just need the money to do what we have to do. But for this particular issue, you know, we need, again, if we were getting $5 a month from everybody, we wouldn't even have to ask for money to do what we're doing because we'd have enough money to do it. And we'd have salaries.
The sad part about it is you think about that now, not to what a month ago or so you're talking about the 0.75 cent where I got, or 0.2 cents. You know, the dollar today is worth about 0.2 cents in 1970s or 1965 or something like that. 0.2 cents. So they've stolen 99.98%.
Today it's 0.75.
Yeah, whatever.
To be right now. I know it's been, when I started calculating it was 2 cents. Then it went down to a penny and a half, then a penny, and now we're under less than a penny. Your dollar, your debt dollar is able to be exchanged for the value of 0.75 cents. That's it. Now, people may not believe that because they're used to what they've been around and inflation and, you know, people. Matter of fact, in this conversation I was listening, mentioned earlier, but these cops, there's 20 law enforcers, talking with this one guy, Michael Francis. And one guy was talking, well, when I first started as a cop, you know, I was getting paid $15 an hour. Can you imagine that? $15 an hour. Who could live on $15 an hour? You know, we give people
an hour a day.
An hour. $15. You can't live on $15 an hour.
No.
You can't live on $20 an hour. And yet, you know, they're giving $20 an hour to some of these places like McDonald's. I think they're starting you off at 16 or 17. You can get up to 20, I think, pretty quickly if you're there long enough. A lot of people are still working and still only making $20 an hour, $15 an hour. And how they survive, it's, you know.
Somebody's making $20 an hour, they can't afford $5 a month, okay?
And that's only 0.25 cents for every dollar, so it's really a lot less than that. What's it, 3 cents? When you go look at inflation and lay it out to gold and silver and figure things out, you know?
That's the other thing that drives me nuts is people have no concept of what inflation is. I mean, you ask somebody and say, well, it's rising prices, you know, and rising prices is a result of inflation. It's not inflation. It's, you're looking through the wrong end of the telescope.
Right.
You know, I've said that to people before, too. I says, you know, have you ever made Campbell's soup? And they say, well, yeah. I says, you take one can of soup and you put one can of water in. You know, but wouldn't you have 10 times as much soup if you put 10 cans of water in?
Well, yeah. You know, look at the pork and beans. They don't even put the pork in anymore. I remember you used to get a little piece of pork. You don't even get that in Campbell's pork and beans, you know?
Yeah, but at least it's pretty thick. I'm just saying, you know, how about 100 cans of soup? That's what they've done. They put 1,000 cans of soup in their Campbell's soup, and no wonder it's not worth anything. It's just water, and that's all we're dealing with. We're dealing with thin air. I mean, it's all thin air, but I mean, it's not worth anything. You know, you talk about $1,000 in Morgan silver dollars, you say maybe that's too much.
Mm-hmm.
It's nothing.
Yeah,
it's
really
nothing.
Right. You're right. Well, look at, you know, I remember when I was young, you know, for a lunch or something, I might get a can of raviolis. You know, Chef Boyardee ravioli or spaghetti and meatballs, and I was, it tasted good. At least I thought it. I was a kid too, so what do I know anyway? But anyway, it tasted pretty good. You know, we always have that around in case you want to eat something quick or something. But what I do is I have to empty because they filled it up with water, and I turn it upside down. I open part of the can up, turn it upside down to get all the water out of it, and you lose about a quarter of the can. I mean, they're doing that with everything. You know, all packaging, you're getting less food, you know, like Ritz crackers, for instance, or a lot of these cookies and stuff that we shouldn't be eating anyway, but in any event, you know, everything shrinks, it's shrunk, and you're paying more for it. You know what I'm surprised about is eggs was going for $5.99, at least here where I live, that was going for that. Before the rise came in, you know, we had all the problems a few years back, and an egg through the roof. I mean, it was like $8, $9 for a dozen. Now eggs are down to like $2.99 a dozen. I mean, even that's high, but I mean, it's a big difference and a big drop. So something somewhere is going right on some levels. I know gas is a problem. You know, what I'm confused about is I don't understand is why we're paying more for gas, even though what's going on over there in the Middle East, it doesn't really affect us. We don't get our gas from there or our oil from there. So, I mean, why is our gas prices going up? They should be going down.
Yeah, what's the international market? That's an international market. You know, me or so.
Something's wrong. Well,
we're paying for everything, so what the heck?
Well, there's hundreds of ships coming in from over in Europe way, you know, China, Russia, and Europe, hundreds of ships on their way here to be filled with our oil and our gas coming into, you know, the Gulf and even going some going down to South America. And I know Trump mentioned that he's going to give them a good deal. He may be, at that point, breaking away from the control system, okay, of... You know, because they control the price of the gas. You know, it's a monopoly ultimately. They've come together and they're all charging this ridiculous price. So who knows? Maybe by the time those ships here and they start to fill them up and they start to go out, then maybe the prices will drop dramatically. I mean, I heard it was over 100, but I hear now it's down at about 90. I mean, if we can get it down to 50 or 60, which there should be no reason why we can't, a barrel, 50, 60 bucks a barrel. Then at that point, our gas prices should go way down. I mean, I'm paying.
Here, listen to what you're saying, though. I mean, how much is a dollar worth? Two tenths of a cent.
Two fifths of a penny time. Yeah, two fifths of a penny is a dollar.
Okay, so I mean, think of how much was oil in 1960? What, $5 a barrel?
Well, I don't know what that was, but I do know that I used to fill up my tank of gas and. In the late 60s, I'd fill up and get a whole tank of gas for just under $5.
Yeah, 25, 30 cents a gallon. I mean, for years,
yeah.
It was a couple of 31 cents a gallon, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, whatever. All I'm saying is that you're comparing apples. You're using an elastic measurement stick, okay?
Yeah.
At $50 a barrel, $100 a barrel, oil is cheap as hell right now compared to what even if it was a penny a gallon, a penny a dollar, $100 would only be $1 per barrel.
That's right. That's true.
You know what I mean? So it's probably about 15 cents a barrel right now in actual money.
Mm-hmm.
It's cheaper than Blazes.
Well, when I went into the service, I mean, you know, I didn't pay taxes on cigarettes, so I was a smoker in those days. And I paid 11 cents a pack. You buy a carton for $1.10. A slice of pizza was 15 cents. A gas was 29 cents a gallon, or 28 cents a gallon, if I remember, even lower.
But, John, think about just think what you're saying, though. At 28 cents a gallon, if the dollar is only worth two tenths of a cent right now, 28 cents a gallon was probably about $8-9 a gallon.
You might be right on that. Yeah, I'd have to do the mathematics. I think you're right on that. Yeah,
things are cheap right now, simply because we're being so much more efficient.
Well, just bear in mind, though, you know, we're getting ready for the collapse. That's going to happen.
Right, right.
No doubt in my mind, because they can't work the numbers no more. They just can't do it. And the only thing holding things up, ultimately, whether people realize it or not, is Trump. He's the only thing holding that up. And he's going to let it go, and it's going to be a controlled demolition, okay, because he's going to move over to gold and silver at that point, put out silver certificates. That's the way he's going to switch over like Kennedy did. Unfortunately, they reversed it as soon as they killed him. And then they reversed it back. They took the silver dollars, silver certificate dollars off of the market. But things are going to happen, and I think by the time the elections roll around, the economy is going to be great. Gas is going to be way down there. We may already be in gold and silver at that point. It's a whole new world. But people don't realize, and I know you do, and a lot of people that listen here do, and other places also, but generally speaking, the majority of people, they have no clue on these things and what's going on. We've been living in a fiction. They've been telling us lies upon lies upon lies upon lies. We've been living in a world of lies, a world of fiction, a fiction that they created. And
we are fiction. We are fiction because we're persons, John. We're fiction.
Right. They made us a fiction.
Things are cheaper now than they've ever been in actual value, simply because we're being so efficient. You look at the size of the ships they had back then, and then look at what they got now and how they're moving stuff. You know, they're moving information with the computers that we used to do with paper. All the stuff is 10 times more efficient. You know, you're in construction, I'm in construction, whatever like that. But I mean, you know, we used to bend metal, whatever like that. Now they got those computerized brakes that will. You just put a piece of metal in there, and it's bent and it's perfect.
When you consider the efficiency, then you know. But remember, even in the '60s, gold was like I don't know, $100, $200 an ounce or something, which was
in '64. It was $35 an ounce, and a dollar was one ounce is 371.5 grains of silver.
What was it in the late 60s? Do you know? Like 68, 69.
He switched it over. It was $42. Nixon switched it over. It was $42 an ounce. And it still listed $42, but, I mean, it was $35 an ounce, and it went to $42. But that was, you know, like in, what, 68? Well, he was 68, 69, 70, whatever he was in office. But I mean, and that, you know, now it's 4,000, whatever like that, you know. So I mean, that's 100 times difference, which makes sense, you know. And silver was going up right now, but all that says is you have to value your dollars going down. The silver is not going up. An ounce of silver 100 years ago is still an ounce of silver today. It's the same silver, silver.
You're right on the prices. I'm looking right now. What was gold? Gold $1. Let's see. Gold in 60, let's say 70, 1970, was $78 an ounce in 1970, $78.40, okay? But when you're making a very good point here because, yeah, efficiency is different. So when we go back, for instance, that 28 cents that I was paying for gas back in 68, 69, let's say, that gallon of gas should really, when we go back to real money, should be a lot less than 28 cents.
Exactly.
Because
when you were paying 28 cents a gallon, it would be the equivalent of paying $8 or $9 a gallon now.
Right. But you're talking about efficiency, and you're absolutely right. You know, you go into a grocery store, and you buy a particular item, you know, you buy your groceries, and you go up to the counter, and you swipe them in, and everything is recorded electronically. So they're already doing stock and figuring out what needs to be done all automatically. Because it used to be they'd have to walk up and down the aisles with the papers and count the cans and then see how many cans of this we need, how many bags of that, how many boxes of this. I mean, that was labor, a lot of labor costs going into that, just running a grocery store on that level alone. And there's a lot of other things, too. And everything is much more efficient because we have the computers, because it is automatically, as soon as you swipe that item over that scanner, calculations are made and orders are being prepared. When it hits a certain point, time to order a case of beans or a case of this or whatever the case may be. So when you think about that, the efficiency, things should be even better. Now remember, this $79, let's see, go back here. This, or 1970, okay, an ounce of gold was $78.40, and that was inflated because that was 20, 40, 68. That's four times the amount of what it should be. It should be $20 an ounce. If you go back to 1913, it was $20 an ounce.
Okay, now, okay, just stop for a second. Stop for a second. Think about this. Define a dollar. Before your seconds,
it's actually a measurement.
It is. It's a unit of measurement for money. And a dollar in U.S. code, look it up. It's in the areas where you have weights and measures. Okay, you have inches, you have pounds, you have dollars. Dollars is what you measure money in, and a dollar is defined as 371.5 grains of silver stamped in the coin by the U.S. Treasury, and it's still the definition of a dollar.
Mm-hmm.
It's still. Okay, mm-hmm. It's Federal Reserve note is denominated in dollars, but it's paper. It's not paper silver. It's paper paper.
Mm-hmm. Well,
so it's like you saying an inch. If an inch was one what we call 1/8 of an inch right now, everything would be screwed up, and they changed the definition of the money, and it screwed everything all up. We're lying. We're stealing from each other.
Mm-hmm.
It's not worth anything.
Well, yeah, look at the people with the most dollars, Federal Reserve dollars, at the end of the day, is the one with the most dollars is the biggest loser.
Biggest loser, because it's losing value. You're right, exactly. And it's losing value like a stone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then you look on the other side of the thing, the petrodollar, okay? We've made these people buy the oil with dollars. That's the only thing that's kept the value, the impression is worth anything up. We've been stealing the hell out of those people money from you know, they're pumping the oil out of the ground, and we're giving them worthless paper for it. They should be ticked, too. We've been stealing them crazy.
I think Trump is going to make that change when these ships come in and he fills them up with oil. I hope at this point, at some point it will do it, but it may very well be when we move off the petrodollar.
Pay us in gold, you know, $80,000 an ounce.
Yeah, gold and silver I don't think will be by that time because the ships are on their way here and we're talking months and we'd be filling up all these tankers. But the thing is, you know, with the gold and silver, before he makes that move, it's going to be a big move. And there's so many things he has to settle off. He's got to finish off with this problem in the Middle East. He's frustrated with it and he's done with them, as we can see. My only concern, you know, he talks about blowing up bridges and their power plants, and you know, my concern though is the people themselves. But I think they are willing to suffer and sacrifice that to get out from the yoke of these total insane people. You know, we got these insane people now running New York City. You know, I just was listening on the news about these new grocery stores that this mayor is setting up. And what he's doing to create these grocery stores. First of all, it's costing $30 million to get each one going. I forget how many square feet. It wasn't that big, maybe 3,000 or 3,800 square feet grocery store, which is a pretty big grocery store. But in any event, you know, each one of those he claims is going to be $30,000 to get it to the point of getting it going. When the fact of the matter is, they were reporting on the news, it actually could be done for $15 million. So where's the other $15 million going? That's
in somebody's pocket, yeah. Just follow the money.
The other thing is that that's going to put all grocery stores in New York City out of business. because people will be able to go buy these things a whole lot cheaper. They don't pay rent. They don't pay taxes. It's backed by the government. I mean, you know, if you go spend $10 worth of grocery in a regular grocery store, over there you might spend $2 or $5. I mean, people are going to go to those stores, and there'll be long lines, all kinds of things. But all these other stores are going to go out of business, and they'll have no food in New York City. There'll be lines around the corner trying to buy food. I can't believe what's going on in New York City. I just can't believe it.
I've been in New York City once, and I've been in Washington, D.C. once, and I never want to go back. How's that sound?
Yeah. Well, I was born and raised in New York City. I used to love it, but yeah, I wouldn't even go down there myself either, not at this point.
I imagine when you were younger, and that was a lot of years ago, John. I would imagine when you were younger, it was probably a pretty neat place to grow up. But
oh, yeah. Well, Manhattan was a little weird and rough. I mean, I know people who grew up in Manhattan, and you know, really a lot of problems down in Manhattan growing up, especially in a red light district, and a lot of places down there were really crazy. But I grew up in the Bronx. If you've grown up in the Bronx or Brooklyn or Queens, it's a little different. Well, a lot different than Manhattan. You know, we used to go down to the Village or go into Manhattan sometimes, you know, in the nightlife and stuff. But you know, you can go down there at 4 o'clock in the morning and find action of all kinds of stuff. The lights are on and the streets are busy. People all over the place at 3-4 o'clock in the morning, moving around, doing things. You know, it's amazing. It's the city that never sleeps. I don't know if any other cities, Chicago's like that or any other city, but New York is a unique place. But I'm glad I wasn't brought up in Manhattan, though, you know.
I've heard stories of Detroit. Detroit was a great city in the 50s. It was a wonderful city, and it was one of the richest cities in the world. Simply because they had, I mean, you could one man working in a car plant could buy a house and pay for it in 6 years.
Yeah.
Just him, yeah. And that was doing everything else at the same time too. You know, his wife wasn't working. He had kids. He had a big family and doing that. But he could pay for a house in 7 years.
When you go back into right after the war, you know, you even in New York here, you'd be able to buy a house in the suburbs for under $20,000, $18,000, $20,000 for a house. You know, and you know, today that same house would cost you $200,000, $300,000. Who knows?
And you're dealing with elastic currency. You're dealing with paper, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know, think about this. How many ounces of gold would it take to buy a house back in the '50s? And how many ounces of gold do you think it would take to buy a house today?
Right, but people were able to still the bang for your money was great. Okay.
Yeah. Well, that was Roger Sherman in the United States Constitution, Article 1, Section 10. No state shall make anything but gold or silver a tender in payment of debt. And look at it. Read it. It's there. It's still there.
Well, like I said, they don't use that no more. People don't.
Well, but they swear an oath to the Constitution, don't they? And the Constitution applies to our public service. It doesn't apply to us.
Yeah, but they're thieves. They're immoral.
Well, and they make statutes, and they make those statutes apply to us, and they don't. And we let it.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're becoming like a third world war. You know, they got rid of Christ. I mean, they got rid of Christ when I was a kid. You know, they moved him over to Xmas, you know, it took a long time, but people have really become demoralized. They've demoralized our children. You know, stealing and things like that is like old hat. It's norm. You know, we get these people coming in from Somalia, for instance. I mean, they have no morals at all, it seems. And it doesn't mean anything to them to lie and to steal or anything, it seems. It's a place, I hear, that doesn't even really have a government. And then they come here and they rip us off and do all these things. You know, they're demoralized. You know, and they bring their law from their land. They're trying to change who we are, okay? But our children in school, we're creating the same situation. We've moved the Bible out of the school. We've moved the morals. We've moved the Ten Commandments out of the school. There's no correction in the school. They teach children crazy, sick things. And people come out of school illiterate. And just barely being able to read.
And whose fault is that? That's our fault, isn't it? If you have children, it's your responsibility to teach them. And if you don't, if you rely on somebody else, then you're going to get what you get. And I got two of my children are flaming liberals too, and it just drives me nuts. Okay. But what can you do? I mean, I don't know. I don't know. We sent them to college, and that's what we got.
Well, yeah, exactly. They're being trained to be demoralized, and you know, they're not trained how to think. They're trained what to think. And I can't believe the logic that some of these people have, and they're so lost they don't even realize how bad it is. But even the people who used to have logic, it seems that they fall into the trap too, you know.
John, we're training. Just think what we're saying. We keep talking about dollars. We don't even understand their language. We don't have any clue what definitions are.
Right.
None.
Yes. Right.
And if I'm speaking to you in Spanish and you don't understand Spanish, that's exactly what they're doing. I mean, legalese is a different language entirely than English.
Absolutely. Yep.
And they're giving us. They say, "Do you understand English?" You know, and the answer is, "Hell no, I don't." Think about this. Now we have synonyms. That's the words that sound the same and spelled differently. Okay. You know, T-O, T-W-O, the letter two, or the number two. It all sounds the same. It means entirely different. If you print something in capital letters, if you're texting, that means you're shouting. So everything means something, okay? But if you just read it out loud, you can't tell what it is.
Right. Well, that's
true. That's what we're doing. They're speaking to us in Spanish or Latin, and then we're answering back in English, and they're crucifying us.
Right. Well, look, that's how they get over on us. Look at it. We think a person is one thing, and they make a person a different thing, like you said. And so we fall into... But again, it gets back to ignorance. If people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect what never was and never will be. Thomas Jefferson. I bring that quote up often because that's one of the most important quotes that people should really realize and understand. And, you know, like once people come to knowledge of these things, they need to be digging down and fixing the problems. But if you don't, you're going to lose everything. You know,
yeah. We're ignorant. We're stupid. Okay, ignorance is not knowing. Stupid is not knowing the difference. Okay, so.
You could be highly educated and still be stupid.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, if there's anybody else on the line, we all let them on. Yeah. I'm babbling here. So.
All right. Well, good conversation. We looked at a lot of little things here. So.
We solved all the world's problems, John.
There you go. You know.
I yield. Thank you.
All right, John. All right. Okay, we're going to go to, it looks like, Linda. Let me mute out others. Okay. It looks like Linda from Virginia, if I can get to you. You've been unmuted. Go right ahead. How you doing?
Hello.
Go ahead. You got the mic.
Okay. Well, I just had a quick update. I have the consumer predatory practices case, and from just trying to buy a HVAC system, and I served I did the notice and demand and served the two places, California and Tennessee, and I received a service process, you know, thing back from San Francisco, but I haven't received anything back from Tennessee yet, so I'm going to have to follow up on that. And
well, no, once at some point they acquiesce, they agree to whatever you have.
Right?
To-
yeah, I think it was 30 days in there, so I'll be waiting, you know, that period of time. But
just make sure you give. 2 days beyond, because you got to give time for mailing, you know, mail to move through the process. And
right.
Get,
I'll give them extra time.
Three or four extra days, you know.
Yeah. And what you were talking about earlier about inflation, it sort of goes along with this situation. This is happening because everything's being merged and consolidated, and so that you don't have, you know, it's anti-competition. You don't have much of a choice of where to go. In my situation, I found out that the same entity that basically dropped me and the year before is the same entity that I'm dealing with now. I didn't know that in the beginning, but then I found out that they're behind the same, you know, it's the same company behind it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and, you know, they just had the Ticketmaster and was it something Nation where they get all the tickets from? They just brought back the monopoly. So they said they're a monopoly, basically. And that's what's happening with this whole global thing is everything's being merged and consolidated, and it's going to be worse with AI, much worse.
Well, yeah, look, at AI is going to be the destruction of mankind. I'm absolutely convinced. I mean, look, it's a great tool, but it's going to be abused, and
you
people
know, but you,
could
you
really...
You know what's not happening in this is... Where are our legislators who should be proactive about all this?
They're too busy running to the bank with their money, with our money.
Yes.
Okay, they're all on the take. Look at the entire Democrat Party. The entire Democrat Party is corrupt. I heard recently one of the Democrat, as a matter of fact, I'm trying to think of his name. He's the one that had the stroke. And he seems to vote the right way more often than not. And he says, you know, there's problems with these people. The thing is that they have to go along with their party. And they can't break away from their party because they're corrupt and they got things on them. And Pelosi and all the others, I mean, Pelosi's out of this game, but not really. She's still in it. But these people, they got things on these people, and they're going to vote the way they're told to vote. Otherwise, they're going to be exposed. And that's the problem with the Democrat Party. We have the same problem with some of Republicans, too. Okay, thankfully, a lot of the Republicans seem to have their minds still about it, and I guess they haven't been exposed themselves to things that, you know, that could be a problem if it's, you know, if it's exposed. And so... I think in the next election, by the time we get there, all the things that are happening, and there's going to be a lot of them completed, a lot of things are going to be exposed. They're now pushing for the arrest very soon for Obama and Comey and a lot of these people in his administration, and that's just the beginning, okay? And so once these things really break, okay, I think we have a great opportunity at that point that we're going to replace a lot of people in Congress and the Senate. And you know, part of our case, I think we're going to get points in there of the fact that, you know, there is a problem with the senators. The senators should be sent there by the legislators of our states because that's their representation. That's their vote. And they don't have a vote no more. So they have no power. They have no authority. And so I think we have a great opportunity. And the timing is right for doing what we're doing because hopefully we'll be by the Supreme Court by about the time of the elections. And a lot of people will be woken up, and the administration could be more bold than what they are. I mean, you can only be so bold because the people don't understand too much. So, but the more they understand, the bolder they can get. And I think it'll be bold enough that they'll be able to back us up, and we get in a new Congress and a new Senate, and the Senate is very important for us to get because they're the ones that make the decisions on what goes on with the courts, you know, who appoints these judges and so on. Again, I think there's an opportunity of impeachment at that point. I mean, we're really pushing for the indictment that we filed on the federal judiciary, the entire federal judiciary, because there's not a federal judge out there. There's not one federal judge out there that has not participating in the shutting down of our courts of justice. Not one. Therefore, they're guilty of subversion. Every single one of them. They've denied us due process. They've thrown us out of our courts. They charge us money to get into courts, and then they give us chancery courts. And we ask for trial by jury, which is an unalienable right, and they deny it, and they throw us out. So we have a great opportunity. People just need to wake up in time to push this along. They've got to get involved. So if you're listening, get involved.
Well,
anything else?
I'm going to vote tomorrow because they have this cockamamie gerrymandering thing in Virginia where they're trying to make it all Democrats.
You mean gerrymandering? Yeah. Yeah, this has been
it's going to be, it's five, it's like 6-5 now or something, like 4-5 or something. They want to make it, so they have one Republican and 9 Democrats.
Right. Well,
I mean,
look,
it's insane.
They've been working on this gerrymandering as long as I've become conscious of the system. And, you know, I really started to become conscious about 1999. And that's where I really am beginning to realize the problems. But gerrymandering is a major problem. It's been going on for a long time. It's clearly unlawful. I mean, if you just look at logic and the way things are, for instance, in New York State, we have 62 counties. Well, guess how many state senators we have? We have 62. Ah, one per county. That makes a lot of sense. Why are they? But they'll cut things off. There's an election district up in northern New York that literally runs more than two thirds of the length of the state of New York through all kinds of counties just to get a strip. And as a matter of fact, the guy who was how the committee man process works, and you know, he taught me about those things. He was teaching a lot of people. We were trying to take over the system from the political process, and he was running for office, and they made a deal with him, but he was the only one to be able to sign in because he was the only Republican in that part of that section. Only one Republican. Okay, everyone else was a Democrat. Okay, so he got himself on the ticket. Of course, he didn't win because he's a Republican, and they arrested him eventually. I don't remember whether he lost his business or not. I mean, he came close to bankruptcy if he didn't. But what was happening, that he was paying his people off the books, you know, without going through the tax process system, and they arrested him for it. And he paid dearly for it. But that's what they do.
Like they say, it's politics is a dirty job or whatever.
Right, and they shouldn't be playing around with politics. Only the political process. There's no need for politicking because we've already defined their powers and authorities. There's nothing new under the sun for them. You know, there's nothing for them to debate and argue other than details of law that we've given them powers and authority to execute or exercise. But, all right, well, anyway, it's 1 minute after 11, so we've come to the end. You got a final word?
No, not really. I just wanted to give an update.
All right, well, good night, everybody, and Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday, and again, support NLA, $5 a month or more. Not a big deal to be able to do that. What's that? Three-fifths of a penny. I got the last one I did was 3/4, but it's actually 3/5, I think, of a penny now, or 2/5. So, again, it's a cup of coffee and a bagel or a donut once a month. Give it up and send us $5 to support us. And also support our our campaign here to go to the Supreme Court through the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury with a presentment.
Oh, John, can you still hear me?
Yep. Yeah, go ahead.
I did have another question. On my consumer predatory practice, you know, the affidavit and everything, mm-hmm. should I send that for you for the presentment?
Well, yeah, we're asking people to do that because it helps build the case, And you know, the more affidavits we can get, the better it is. And of course, we have a couple of hundred cases attached to it also. So these are cases that we've been working over for the past 10 years or so. And so all those cases will be attached. We're not going to literally put in all the cases in a literal sense, but or the paperwork that we filed on their behalf is what we'll be applying into our paperwork, but we'll see how we work that out. But yeah, anybody who wants to put their affidavit in, you need to mail it to NLA or National Liberty Alliance, but you can put NLA, just follow the instructions on the front page, and we'll attach the affidavit and send us a donation, whatever you can afford. So.
Yeah, I just didn't know because it's not a case yet, but yeah. Okay.
All right. Okay, with that, good night, everybody. Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday.